Nation podcast, HawkeyeNation.com. Andrew Downs and Joe Hegan with you once again. Joe, what's up, man?
Hey, you know, just watching some Hawkeye basketball and, you know, really paying attention to what's going on for next year's Iowa Hawkeye football.
Yeah, man, it's been some fun times. Certainly watched the basketball team go on this this four-game win streak after that loss at Minnesota on Christmas Day. And you and I are going to spend a couple of minutes here. We'll talk some basketball, obviously. That's kind of the front of mind for all Hawkeye fans right now as the game against Michigan State is Thursday evening. But then the real purpose of this podcast, Joe, and you and I mentioned this before in other podcasts and have been kind of teasing this for a while now, is to kind of look back on this 2020 football season and, you know, what we liked, what we didn't like, and kind of what we're looking forward to moving ahead, kind of where the program is, all of that, kind of an overarching conversation about football, and I'm excited to do that with you.
I can't wait. It's the season that wasn't that ended up being.
So. Yeah, right. And that wasn't again towards the end. And so we'll hit all of that. But first, before we do that, this basketball team has just been incredibly fun to watch over these last four games. This was obviously a huge stretch for this team. That loss to Minnesota. You know you're not going to go undefeated in a league like the Big Ten and the way it is this year. And we didn't expect that. But I also didn't expect Iowa to lose that game at Minnesota. Really, at no point in that game did I feel like it was in jeopardy until the very end. And then the Gophers just got crazy hot from three in overtime and kind of put us away really quickly. But to bounce back from that, you know, play a Northwestern team that at that time was atop the Big Ten standings, get that win at Rutgers in a really hard-fought game, you know, really kind of a gut-check game and for Iowa to do that, and then to blow out Maryland and essentially blow out Minnesota again at home on Sunday. This four-game win streak has been a lot of fun to watch. We've seen a lot of different guys get into the game and make impacts. We've seen Jordan Bohannon kind of become himself, which is great to see. Just a really, really good time for the Hawkeye basketball team.
Yeah, no, he, you know, speaking of Jordan Bohannon, I mean, I think that he is kind of the focal point of Iowa basketball. At first, had a bad game, but you look at the guy now, and he's a completely different player. I mean, after that talk with Fran McCaffrey, getting his swag back, he wasn't pointed at all. And he is the right man. I had kind of debated back and forth if maybe he should be, you know, directly off the bench and from the bench. But given his production and what he's doing now, I think he's firmly, you know, told everybody, the fans and the media included, that he is, you know, belongs in the starting lineup.
There's no doubt. Yes, he has proven that to me, and I'm one of the guys who, I mean, even back into the summer, Joe, I was looking at this team and what they had coming back, wondering about Bohannon's health and how quickly he'd be able to kind of bounce back into the player that we know and love, assuming that Wieskamp, Frederick, would be able to kind of handle a lot of that outside shooting ability, and then remembering kind of Joe Toussaint throughout the Big Ten season last year. Essentially forced into a starting role when Jordan Bohannon went out and got better and better as the year went on and really provides a different level of speed and intensity that we don't have a lot of on this roster right now. And so my thought was, hey, put Toussaint in the starting lineup, have that aspect in there, and let the other guys kind of do the shooting. But when Bohannon is feeling it, and he has been each of the last three games, hopefully that continues, there is nobody, maybe in the country, certainly nobody that I remember watching as a Hawkeye who has the clutch ability, just the swagger to go up and take those and make those shots. And then when he can, you know, add to that 14 assists and no turnovers like he did against Minnesota over the weekend, it's a different level. This team is on a different level when he is playing as well. And that's evidenced by the stat sheet from that Minnesota game where you didn't get the input from guys like Keegan Murray, CJ Frederick. What you got was the Iowa's big three, the big three that we've kind of, I think we've kind of forgotten that Iowa has because this roster is so deep. But you had Bohannon, Garland, Wieskamp combined for more points than Minnesota, just those three players. They scored 72 of Iowa's 86 points on Sunday afternoon.
Well, and you see when, you know, Garza is always on. The guy is always on. But what complements that is when, you know, Bohannon, Joe Wieskamp, it just makes the entire dynamic of that team so much different. They're able to spread the ball out. They're able to penetrate. I've seen Jordan early in the season, he was a little timid to drive to the basket. You know, he's kind of worked that out. He's actually attacking the basket a little bit more. He doesn't really go in for the kill. Like, I don't think he has the speed as a Joe Toussaint, but as long as he keeps that perimeter threat out there, it really opens up the ability to move that ball around. And with Connor McCaffrey, what you saw when he went out was that the team is different without him. He is absolutely the glue and the main man for moving that ball around. His vision for getting that ball to the right person is unbelievable. And to have him out of that lineup kind of threw us for a loop a little bit. So having him back and getting in the mix with even the guys off the bench with Keegan and Patrick, it really, really seems to have a nice dynamic and flow to it. And even the guys off the bench are starting to make a lot of difference in this team down the stretch.
Yeah, they really are. And, the Connor McCaffrey thing, that's a really good point you bring up, because I feel like a lot of people look at his stat sheet and say he can't score. Why is he, starting and playing a lot of minutes for a top five team and a really good program? Is it because of his last name? Is it because, all these other things? And the answer is, he has earned this, and you see it when he's not there. You see the difficulty this team has running an offense. You see the difficulty they have getting the ball inside to Luka Garza in the right position. Bohannon can certainly do that from time to time, but Connor McCaffrey is as you said, the glue certainly of this offense and provides kind of that bully mindset. He's got some of the toughness that maybe...
Oh, he's got his dad in him.
He does, right? He does, and that's a great thing. More so than Patrick, I think I'll see that as Patrick's career progresses, and I hope we do see a little bit more out of him because he's a different player. He'll be able to score. His offensive game is on a different level than his older brothers. But what Connor McCaffrey means to this team is everything. I guess really, and then Joe Wieskamp has continued to be aggressive. He's had a couple of off games here and there, but for the most part, he's a pretty steady guy, and his aggression is really good. His rebounding has been fantastic. Really, right now, at least in my mind, Joe, the biggest question for this team is, in this very moment, is what is it going to take to get CJ Frederick kind of going again? What's it going to take for him to have a big game? Not that it's needed, or not that I'm worried about that in the long term, but like as I sit here today going into a Michigan State game and really a four game set here before that Illinois game that I think Iowa should kind of run the table here, that's maybe my only question about this team immediately.
Yeah, I've been waiting for him. I mean, early in the season, he made some really, really good strides from last year, and I was really impressed. I just haven't seen the kind of fire and oomph out of him that Wieskamp has had, really, that even Bohannon having, a small slump, if you want to call it that, and then coming right back out of it. CJ just hasn't really found his gear yet, and I think he's going to find it, but I hope it's quick, and I hope he's challenged. He just needs to make those perimeter shots. And in his driving ability, when we saw him early in the season, he was able to get to the basket and really, push his will, right there in the middle. And Nungy has done a great job of that as well, but he doesn't get as many minutes. So CJ Frederick, I think he will find his groove. I just hope it's sooner than later, and it needs to happen really right now, because as we go down the stretch, it's going to be all about seeding. And There's some teams left on our schedule. They're going to be, vying for a top position in the Big Ten. Mainly, I saw a great matchup between Michigan and Wisconsin last night, and I got to tell you, Michigan scares the death out of me. That team is nasty. And we got Michigan State coming up, and we're going to focus on them, but I can't believe we only play Michigan once, but maybe that's a good thing.
It may be, and it's funny when you look at Iowa's schedule, to only play Michigan once, only play Illinois once. On one hand, you're missing out on what I think could be some really, really good games. On the other hand, as an Iowa fan, it's like, okay, we maybe don't need to see those teams twice. Unfortunately, both those games are on the road. And those two March games in the regular season that Iowa has before what we hope is a Big Ten tournament, in the middle of March there, I think that could be where this conference comes down to, right? Because Iowa is at Michigan on March 4th and then home against Wisconsin on March 7th. And at least as we sit here today, those are the top three teams. Now, Wisconsin didn't look like a competitor to win this league when they played against Michigan. We'll see how Iowa looks against Wisconsin. We don't get them for the first time until February 18th. And so it's going to be an interesting kind of run here for these next few weeks where Iowa's going to play a lot of games that they should win. And it's hard to I've made kind of a bold pronouncement on my last Instant Reaction podcast after the Minnesota game that, you know, looking at the schedule, to say that a team should have like an 8-game win streak in a conference play in this Big Ten, that's a big like should have thing to put on a team. And I say that because we have a 4-game win streak right now, and the next 4 games should be won by Iowa. They should have an 8-game win streak going into that Illinois game on January 29th. Obviously, things can happen, and you know, avoiding injuries and COVID situations. But these next 4 games, if you're going to win the Big Ten regular season, I think these next 4 games have to be wins.
They're critical, and I think they're up to the challenge. I think that we are, you know, arguably the best team in the Big Ten. Michigan, you know, hasn't lost a game yet. So, I mean, they're technically in first right now. Iowa, a close second here. We're going to find out going down the stretch. But to win 4 more games in a row would be a huge confidence boost. And I'm actually, for the first time, Illinois is still a great team, but they're not the team that scares me as much as they did at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, Michigan.
It's mainly Michigan now. And Michigan State, you know, this Thursday is going to be a nice challenge, a nice test. Anytime you're facing an Izzo team, you're going to get the best that college basketball has to offer. So I know that they're going to be on their game that day. But it's going to be a gauntlet. I mean, we said at the beginning of the season that the Big Ten is stacked. This is probably the best Big Ten roster of teams that you've seen probably in 30 years. Yeah. I mean, this is a legit amazing conference. I mean, there's no other conference that comes close as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Joe, let's get to why we are here today, and that is to talk about Hawkeye football and kind of put a bow on this season as the college football season drew to a close on Monday night with Alabama's stomping of Ohio State. And man, that Alabama team is just too good. It's just too good. I mean, Ohio State was really, really good. They kicked the absolute crap out of Clemson the week before. And just, you know, even I feel like even at full strength, Ohio State wouldn't have been able to compete with that team.
I think you're right. I mean, the Heisman Trophy winner is the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yes.
That guy, yes. Smith, was just unbelievable. But, I mean, Ohio State, I don't know if the sweater vest Jim Tressel defense was out there being conservative, but they certainly didn't look like an Urban Meyer type of a team. Offense was kind of lackluster, and the defense, having a defensive back on Smith was just – I didn't understand it. There's a lot of weirdness of that, but the game was hyped. It was good for about half, and – then Alabama just took over. And that's what, Saban's the number one all-time for championships now?
Yep, 7 now. Yeah. 6 with Alabama in the last 12 years. I think I saw that no recruit who has stayed at Alabama for at least 3 seasons has not won a national championship.
Yeah, so every recruit that he's recruited has gone. So, that's think incredible. About that for a pitch. You're trying to pitch to kids to come to Alabama. You come to Alabama, you're going to get
I can guarantee you a national championship. Well, the Iowa Hawkeyes finished ranked 16th in the AP poll, and while we got to find out how good Alabama is and how good Ohio State is, we never really got to find out how good this Iowa team is. And I think that in the end, that's going to be the thing I regret most about this football season, is just that we'll never quite know. It'll always be a question of how good this team is or was or could have been. I guess first, Joe, overall, just kind of the as you look back at 2020 as the football season as a whole, and maybe even, you know, starting all the way back in June when things started to hit the fan and it felt like the program was, you know, tail spinning a little bit. In those 6 months, I guess overall, do you count the 2020 football season a success for the Hawkeyes?
For the Hawkeyes, absolutely. Being able to stay healthy, being able to do the right things, and to be that cohesive of a team. I mean, at the beginning of the season, we posed the question, the challenge, you know, are these guys going to be able to come together, ignore the outside, you know, talk, and show us that they are unified as a team? I mean, they did that. Even after 2 losses, which, I mean, 2 losses in a row at the beginning of the season, that's tough for any team, especially a team who's had some strife, you know, before the season even began. And they did that with flying colors. I never really saw, you know, anything on social media or anything else that, that suggested that they weren't unified. They went to work. There was a lot of people questioning quarterback play, this, that, and the other, but it still all coalesced to have a great season. And unfortunately, yeah, we didn't get to finish that and cap that off. And that's a regret that I have for this season, is these guys earned it and they still didn't get to, you know, prove their mettle on the field for a bowl game. So that was hard for me to take.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as you said, the kind of the biggest thing we learned this year was that Kirk Ferentz still has control of this program. He's still the right guy to be leading this program, and that things are headed in the right direction. And that, I think all of those were in question at some point throughout the last 6 months, whether that be in June when the allegations of racial disparities came out, whether that be, you know, when the investigation from that Kansas City law firm came out, or whether that be after the 0-2 start and Amir Smith-Marset's OWI, and it kind of felt like everything had kind of gotten away. And you're right, nothing on social media that made us think that anything was that, because the players always said the right things, as you would expect.
Yep.
But we've found nothing since then that tells us that that's not actually what was going on or how they felt. There wasn't a lot of social media chatter even after the season. There haven't been a bunch of mass transfers or anything like that. The recruiting class, for the most part, was held together and cohesive and signed on signing day, and the future looks bright there as well. So I think, you know, topic 1A, kind of win 1A for me from this football season, is that they were able to hold it together through, I mean, one of the most tumultuous off seasons that I can imagine anybody having, other than, you know, the handful of programs that have been kind of death penalized or had these, you know, ridiculous things. Yeah. Everybody had a weird off season. Iowa had the weirdest off season, and they were able to come through that and still get to a 6-2 season. And I think you use the word a great season. I think you're exactly right. I don't think that's an overstatement. I think what Iowa was able to do on the field in the 8 games that they played was great, and it wasn't perfect by any means, and there are still questions that need to be answered going into next season. But a lot of questions were answered during this season and answered in the affirmative. And a lot of cool things happened this season. You extended streaks against some of your rivals. You beat Minnesota for a 6th straight time. You beat Nebraska for a 6th straight time. You ended a couple of really ugly streaks against Penn State and Wisconsin. You beat Illinois for, I think, a 6th time as well. 6th or 7th time for the Illinois thing.
Yep.
And you know, that rivalry could get bumped up a little bit here as Brett Bielema takes the helm there. That could be fun.
Media days are going to be fun.
Right. But you still had some of the kind of typical Iowa things, the questionable play calling in that Northwestern game, the getting up big and then kind of coasting to a loss, really, throwing the ball 50 times in that game with a quarterback that just wasn't prepared to have that kind of game plan put on him. And I would say still isn't prepared for that from anything I've seen from Spencer Petras. And that's something that you and I will certainly talk about here in the next few minutes, is kind of what the future looks like at the quarterback position and what we would like to see there. You had that Purdue game where you have the kind of Iowa typical thing of letting a team hang around, not being able to put them away, and then they hang around long enough and they're able to make the play towards the end of the game that ends up winning the game. And those two losses are something that we're always going to look back on and say, what if?
Points.
Because this is a team that should have. Is that too strong to say they should have won the Big Ten West?
No, they should have won the Big Ten West. And honestly, you know, what if? But those two teams that beat us, I mean, if they would have played us later in the season,
yeah,
if we would have had a regular season, would play those non-conference games and gotten prepared, I think Petras would have been a little bit more up to speed and ready, a little more confidence. I mean, I think he would have, some of the smaller teams, MAC teams, would have played, he would have gotten some great opportunities to score some points and get comfortable. And I think that would have done him a huge wealth of good towards the regular Big Ten season to get him ready for that. I don't think we lose those games, especially since we lost them so close and we know the game plan. I think we would have potentially, I don't know, it was a weird season, but maybe could have gone undefeated up until a bowl game. I mean, who knows? I mean, we're never going to know. But they certainly had the level of talent on the field and the ability to do so. And we saw so, you know, all year long, after those two games, they finally settled in and got their strength down. They weren't really prolific where the receivers were, as far as the receiving core, which is going to be down next year. We're not going to have that awesome receiving core as deep as it was. But, you know, there's some bright spots to look forward to. Hopefully, you know, like you had mentioned, Spencer Petras, and there's going to be a quarterback race for that. There's going to be a competition this spring, and I think that he should welcome that, and I think he will, and hopefully we find the best quarterback. I'm rooting for him, but I want the best guy on the field.
Yeah, how do you feel about that right now? You say you're rooting for him, and I am too. Like, I'm rooting for everybody, right? But the second string and third string guys are Hawkeyes too, and if they're able to win that job, they will earn it, they will deserve it, and we will cheer for them just as loudly as we cheer for everybody. I wonder what most fans think. Do they think that they've seen enough of Spencer Petras? And because here's kind of the I'm trying to come up with the storylines, you know, come August when they announce the starting quarterback. And if they announce that Spencer Petras has won this job, will people take that as, oh no, we don't have a great quarterback on this roster? Or will they take it as, okay, Petras took another step and is ready to kind of take the helm of this team and take them further than he was able to his first season?
I think most are going to say, oh no.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, just because, you know, he wasn't the sexy quarterback.
No,
he never lit it up.
And
he's got a heck
like
of an arm. It just seemed like his decisions and some of his touch plays just weren't there. It's almost as if he had kind of reminded me of like Kurt Warner when he was playing in the Barnstormers. He had a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
Those guys, broken fingers and catching the ball. You know, that's how hard he throws it. These guys aren't used to that. And I don't know, you know, I watched some of his high school film, and he was throwing it hard there too. I don't know what changed from high school to, you know, college. I mean, he's a lot faster with his ball, his fastball. But he just has to dial that in. And I think if he can do that, he will be really good. Unfortunately, you know, we have to see it during the game time. I don't really care what you're doing during practice.
Right.
And that's, you know, the coaches, I have to believe the coaches have this dialed in. They see these guys every day. They're working with them every day. But I do believe he will probably end up winning the position this spring, you know, barring some crazy amount of talent from one of our other guys. But, you know, I'm rooting for him because he has the skill level to do it. And I believe that he can make the throws. He's just got to dial in that nice touch. And you saw some of that in some of the late action and some
he
of the
did.
Games that they had towards the end of the season. He was able to come back and make some great plays. It's just, we got to have consistency, and that's what he's got to work on. But I do think the fans are going to be a little bit kind of bemoaning if they hear his name called for the starting lineup.
Yeah, because, you know, I think if Alex Padilla was capable of overtaking Spencer Petras for this job, he probably already would have done it. So I don't give Padilla a lot of hope to do so. I think the name that fans want is Deuce Hogan, right? Because he's got the name, he's got like the social media presence. He does seem like that sexy quarterback, you know, with the big arm and the swagger and all of
he's
that stuff. And so you wonder, and then, you know, it's whoever it is not going to get an easy start to next season. And so you're going to have to come out playing well to have the fan base stay on your side, because, I mean, we thought this season was tough jumping right into conference play. Joe, if you look at our schedule to start next season, in September, we've got two top 10 likely teams as the first two games, a home game against Indiana to open the season, which is weird in and of itself. Not only that it's a Big Ten conference game to open the season, but that Indiana is likely a top 10 preseason team. And then another unlikely preseason top 10 team in Iowa State. And by the way, we get to go to Ames for a second game in a row.
You know, have they decided that yet? Because that was my big conjecture, you know, towards the end of the season. I was like, you know, that's going to be an issue. That's going to be something that they're going to be talking about.
It may be something
where
they're
going to play.
Yeah, it may be something they're still working on or could still change. But everything I've seen, has this game staying in Ames, mostly because, you know, the way they set this kind of back and forth schedule was to have a certain number of home games for each team in that season. So it would just kind of throw things off a little too much to flip that right now when you've got these schedules booked for years and years in advance.
Well,
and so,
and I'll be honest, you know, it's not really, I mean, if I'm a Cyclone fan, it's not their fault that the Big Ten said we're not doing out of conference games. So I'll give them that, but I really wanted to see it happen in Kinnick.
Yeah, me
That would have been nice. Because I think, you know, it may not be popular amongst the Iowa State fans, but I think a lot of Iowa fans legitimately feel, I think we would have taken them to task. I don't know that we would have beat them. I feel that we probably could have. They had a lot of talent on their team. I mean, they're certainly a very, very good team.
No doubt.
They proved it by winning their bowl. But I think that Iowa had the physicality and the style of ball to we know them. Too.
Yes.
We know Iowa.
Yes.
State, so.
Well, and you know, so here's why I would give Iowa the advantage in this hypothetical game if it were to happen this past season, and I really wish it would have, because that's the type of team I'm talking about. I want to see Iowa measure up against one of these teams and see what they could have done when they were really, really rolling. I think Iowa's defense would give Iowa State fits. I really do. I know Iowa State is a good offense, and Breece Hall would probably get his, and you know, Charlie Kohler would probably score a touchdown and all of those things, but I don't think Iowa State's going to be putting up 35 points on this Hawkeye defense. I also think Iowa State and Brock Purdy in particular are a little careless with the ball at times. He is turnover prone, whether that be interceptions or fumbles, and Iowa can force those things. I think Iowa's offense would have struggled a bit with Iowa State's defense and Mike Rose and some of those guys, but I think Tyler Goodson could have gotten off and could have had a good game. I think it would have been a low-scoring, close game. The reason I give Iowa the advantage is the reason Iowa has had the advantage in several of these games, because Iowa is more disciplined and better on special teams, and we saw how much that matters this year. Iowa has a better kicking game, a better punting game, and a better return, and you know, All of it. Iowa is superior to Iowa State, was this year, in special teams. And then just kind of the X factor, the pressure of it. I mean, Iowa is used to beating Iowa State. We saw it in this last game where Iowa State was going to have a chance to march down and try to score a touchdown. And what happens? They make a mistake. And Iowa – Matt Campbell and Kirk Ferentz are very similar. They're cut from the same cloth. And Iowa State fans don't like that, because it's a hard thing to be a fan of teams like this, where every game comes down to one or two plays, and every game is within a possession. And all it takes is for you to not get that break, or not get that bounce, or not make that catch, and you lose games that you feel like you should have won. And I think something like that would have happened that would have given Iowa the win. I would have loved to have seen that game, though.
Well, and that would have changed the dynamic of Iowa State season as well.
For sure.
I mean, that it really would have. And, you know, who knows? And maybe it was a good thing for them they didn't play us. And, you know, for us, I think it probably would have been a really good thing for us to play them, just to get that under our belt and moving into the Big Ten season. But, you know, it wasn't to be. At least they got basketball. we got the basketball game this year.
Yes.
And hopefully next year. I mean, they have a plethora. I mean, I think the way too early poll showed Iowa State as, what, number 8?
I think that's right. Yeah, 6 maybe.
Yeah. 6 or 8,
right around
one of the
there.
Two. But yeah, they're in the top 10, and you know, we're 16. I'm great with that. I mean, what was it, third year in a row that Iowa's been ranked in the top 15?
Yeah,
top 25?
And that's only the second time in the Ferentz era that's happened. 2002 to 2004. I think we finished 8th each of those seasons. So you know, the bar was a little higher in those days. But three years in a row where Iowa finishes ranked, and you look at next season, they're going to go into the year. I mean, top 15, right around there, probably. It's certainly top 20, I think, for Iowa in the preseason. And if you beat a top 10 or, you know, top 12 Indiana team at home in that first game, you're going to move up a little bit. And that Cyhawk game is going to be as hyped as any that we've seen.
Hey, Iowa State's finally helping us. You know, for years I was like,
right.
I really don't know why we play this game, because if we lose, we look terrible. If we win, well, we just won a game that we should have. Now it's actually, you know, they're ranked. We beat them. It's a good, you know, quality victory. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad, in a way, I'm glad they're a much better and improved team, because it's going to help Iowa too. So I look forward to playing that. And just a thought that I had, we were talking about, you know, defense. Didn't Iowa finish this year with one of the best not allowing points. It was like 20 points or under. Yeah. I mean, our defense was stout. Phil Parker is just a brilliant, brilliant defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it's like 12 games in a row or so, maybe even more than that now, that Iowa has not given up more than 24 points, and gave up 24 once this season, that first game to Purdue. Purdue won 24-20. But that's the high water mark for this defense giving up points, which is pretty remarkable.
And Van Valkenburg's coming back, baby. He's coming back.
Yeah.
I can't wait. It's going to be great.
Just a couple of kind of overarching, you know, things looking back at this season. Let's have a little bit of fun with this. You know, when I try to think of, like, the moment from this season, two of them, I guess, jump out to me right away. The Davion Nixon pick six against Penn State. That was so much fun, so athletic. To see him kind of do that Euro step quarterback and take it to the house. You wonder how much that play alone played into him, you know, ultimately being named the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. Not that he didn't deserve it. He certainly did. But I feel like to get an award like that, to kind of elevate to that level, you have to have that moment. You have to have that play that everybody can look to, that highlight that people can see, especially when you're talking about a defensive lineman who – maybe doesn't make a lot of kind of highlight reel type plays. So I think that's number one probably in my mind. And then for better or for worse, the second play that jumps into my mind is Amir Smith-Marset flipping into the end zone against Wisconsin and gimping up with that bum ankle.
You know, that's both of those are great. Amir Smith-Marset, you know, he had his difficulty with the OWI, but he moved past that. He apologized. I think we can all understand that, you know, he is a kid. He made a mistake. Wasn't a good one, but he made it. He owned it. Came back. He still performed. He knew this was going to be his last game, too. And the flip was fun. The flip was fun. He got injured. People were kind of griping, oh, you shouldn't. You know what? He's a kid. He had fun. We want these guys to have fun, especially in a year like this. And then Davion Nixon, that guy has the biggest, brightest smile ever. I loved it. I mean, you saw that guy just, you know, do a little shake and bake, 300-pound shake and bake. That's incredible. And you're absolutely right. That's why he, you know, he had that little notch in his football belt for being player of the year. So that's what's great.
Any other
Iowa
moments,
just had a lot of great moments.
Yeah, is there any other moments that I'm missing that jump out to you right away? Again, those are kind of the two, and obviously there were a lot of them. Tyler Goodson's touchdown run against Wisconsin, the long one to kind of really ice that game, is another one that kind of jumps out at me. But so, you know, many of these games were just kind of blowouts that there weren't a lot of huge plays.
You know, for me, my biggest things that I'm going to remember from this season was Kirk. Now, I love the players, and the players are fun to watch, but his attitude, the Minnesota game, calling the timeouts, towards the end of the game, you know, leaving the timeouts on the field, and then against Nebraska. You know, just asking, you know, clapping, like, you know, am I dressed appropriately? Do you like what I'm wearing? I mean, he had a snarky, I don't know if it's because he is the Don of college football, or, you know, if he just got to that point where, you know, I've been through all this stuff during the off season. We've moved past that. Then we got to the season. I've been here, and we're talking, you know, we've gone through COVID and all this stuff, and we're talking about this. This is what we're talking about. Kind of reminds me of, like, you know, what's his name? Irving, when he was talking practice?
Yeah, right. In your point, I kind of forgotten about that. The snarky Kirk that we got this year. A lot of the talk over the summer was let these guys be themselves, right? Let their personalities shine. I think we saw Iowa do that with Amir Smith-Marset. Let him do what he was going to do. And I wonder if some of that rubbed off on Kirk Ferentz, and he said, you know what, I'm going to a little bit here, and I'm going to let PJ Fleck know, and I'm going to let Scott Frost know that I don't appreciate kind of the way they approach this thing. It's not my style, and you know, I certainly respect them on the field, but if they're going to talk some junk, if they're going to pull some stuff, I can do that too. I can come right back at you. And so really enjoyed that level of Kirk. It'll be interesting to see how much of that stays into next year. And I really think, you know, the calculated nature of Kirk Ferentz, he's not going to say stuff like that after a Northwestern game, right? He has too much respect for Fitzgerald. He's not going to say stuff like that after certain games because he respects those coaches. I don't know. I'm not going to say he doesn't respect PJ Fleck and Scott Frost, because I don't want to put that on him. I'm sure, you know, Kirk is a good guy, but he showed how he feels about those guys, or at least in contrast with how he feels about the rest of the coaches in the league.
Well, yeah, he shows, you know, he's from the Hayden Fry era of football. Hayden Fry had a little more fun than Kirk does, but you know, he is that old school cloth, you know, and he was showing, he came into the league, you know, at the same age as Frost. And, you know, you compare and contrast from, you know, Kirk's start to where he is right now. He's been the same guy up until this year. He's been the same guy. So it was fun to see that. At least we got to see a little bit of you know, the real Kirk Ferentz, how he really feels. He just kind of let and just showed it what it was. It was great.
Another really kind of moment of the season, snapshot of the season. This is in a negative way that just kind of is the Mekhi Sargent fumble in that Purdue game, you know, driving late to kind of take the what it felt like you were going to go in and take the lead. Seemed like Purdue was going to be able to stop Iowa's offense, and to have that fumble in that moment really kind of let that slip away. And you know, nothing against Mekhi, obviously didn't try to do that or anything like that, but it was I guess if I'm looking at moments of the season that made the season, I think that certainly needs to be in the mix.
Yeah, that was a bummer. You know, it's hard being a running back, but one of the most important things is taking care of the football. I think he did a pretty good job for the most part. But yeah, in situations like that, it's hard, and it's kind of reminded me a little bit of our game against Purdue in, what, 2002, when Dallas Clark – no, I'm sorry. It was against Iowa State. Dallas Clark fumbled on, like, the one-yard line.
Oh, yeah.
And that was our only loss of the year, was against Iowa State. And, it kind of reminded me of that when I saw that.
How about a game? What was your favorite game of this season? And obviously there are six to choose from, right? The six wins are your favorite games. To blow out Michigan State the way they did after that 0-2 start, but you knew it wasn't a great Michigan State team.
No.
That Minnesota game, that may be it for me. That may have been my favorite. Friday night, you still thought Minnesota was a pretty good team, and you know, better than maybe they ultimately turned. And you still really didn't know much about Iowa's team yet, because you kind of felt like that Michigan State blowout was how bad Michigan State is than how good Iowa is. I feel like the Penn State game, Penn State this year, the Nebraska game, that's always fun to get that win. The Illinois game, I kind of put that in the same boat as like the Penn State or Michigan's, and Wisconsin was pretty down by the time as well, although I'll never turn my nose up at a beat down of Wisconsin. I think, just doing this off the top of my head, I think going back, that Minnesota game, although not a good game, you know, not an entertaining game if you're a neutral observer, it was 35-0 for the vast majority of that game. It was the only reason it wasn't a shutout is because PJ Fleck called that final timeout late in the game to get that score. I think looking back, that's the game I enjoyed the most as a fan.
I think that was probably the most enjoyable game. Mine is probably still the Wisconsin one, just because we hadn't beaten them for forever. But as far as gameplay and enjoyment from just a, you know, being able to do. That Minnesota game was fantastic.
Well, the Wisconsin one, you felt like, all right, like now six in a row, that's something not a lot of Iowa teams have done. And you still felt like you had a big game coming up on Champions Week and then hopefully a big bowl game. And so it still felt like things were kind of rolling at that point, which was fun.
Well, yeah, and I felt like we were poised to have a good you know, showing for the Big Ten West. And didn't work out that way. I mean, Northwest, I thought they would probably embarrass themselves against Ohio State, and they didn't for a while. They played pretty well, but you know, Ohio State being what they are, they're kind of used to be the big two, Michigan and Ohio State, but it's really just lately. So it was. I wish we would have had the opportunity to play Ohio State. We haven't played them since the game taking of 55 points on them, which. That was a worse Alabama game.
It was. That's fun.
So I hope they don't forget that. But
MVP for the season, I mean, Davion Nixon, I guess, is the obvious answer. Yeah. I'm not even worth talking about anybody else. The defensive line, maybe as a position group, the most impressive, especially because, Joe, coming into the season, that was a big question mark. You know, where is this defensive line going to get the pressure that AJ Epenesa provided? What are they going to be able to do? And to not just do what they did, but to have several, you know, all players to have the defensive player of the year in the conference on that line. And as you mentioned, Van Valkenburg coming back to have another hopefully big season next year. I think Nixon's probably the MVP of the team, and that defense probably the MVP among units.
Well, yeah, they kept Iowa in it, and it was strictly, you know, for this season, it was the defense. The defense really owned this season. The offense did just enough to do what they needed to do, and that, you know, win ball games. That's all I care about. But next year, it's going to be a little bit different dynamic. But for our defensive, you know, both offense and defensive lines, I never get too, I guess, angst, because they just know how to prepare those guys. Mm-hmm. Getting the pressure sometimes can be an issue, but for the most part, defense, I'm pretty confident that after the first three games of the season, getting the kinks worked out, that by the time Big Ten hits, they're usually squared away. They're usually really good, and I really look forward to seeing that next year. It's going to be a challenge, but I think the thing that surprised me this year was that the center, Tyler Linderbaum, didn't make first team, all Big Ten. I don't understand how he doesn't make first team. I mean, I think it was an Ohio State player that did, but I don't know of a better guy in probably the country than Tyler Linderbaum.
Well, he'll be back to win those awards next season.
Oh, and I tweeted out too. I was like, he doesn't have anything to worry about. He doesn't care. He's going to be making those NFL dollars. Yes. And that's all that really matters.
Yes. So. Yes, exactly. Offensively, I guess, would you say the MVP was Tyler Goodson? I mean, the first all Big Ten first team running back Iowa has had since Sean Green in 08, just his sophomore season. But man, he is a special, special player.
He absolutely Tyler Goodson. He has really, he's grown a lot, and to see him even get better for next year is going to be incredible to watch. He's so strong, he's quick, he's got such amazing vision, and as long as we have good offensive line play, which I hope we have next year, he reminds me a lot of like a Fred Russell. And he's quick and he's fast, and he's able to get into open space, and once he's in open space, you just felt like, man, he's gone. So I'm looking really, really forward to seeing him get even better and really carry the ball towards hopefully a Big Ten West championship.
Well, Joe, we have set a record. No Iowa football conversation this season has gone this long without mentioning Torrey Taylor and the punting game. The best punter in the Big Ten in his very first season of football. So much fun to watch. So cool to just kind of know this story and hear him talk. But beyond all of that, the level of which a great punter affects a game and is an advantage for a team, especially a team like Iowa, who plays, you know, control ball and field position football, and the weapon that he is, and I don't say that as a joke, no. You know, the weapon he is as a punter for this Hawkeye team, I really think can't be overstated. He had just a phenomenal first season.
He is, I call him Lord Taylor, because I thought I heard an announcer say Lord, so he's forever Lord Taylor to me, but he is amazing. He's got that coffin corner kick, which I don't know if he was told to do that, if they decided to bring it back. You don't see that much in college football. I asked Kluver if he had, why that was, and he said he didn't really know, but, you know, as far as like the NFL, maybe they, you know, like the guys to kind of bring it out, but he is such a weapon of just stopping a team in their tracks and really stifling any kind of momentum that they may have by flipping the field. He is such a weapon. He is so good at what he does, and the accuracy coming off his foot. I mean, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that he's got kind of Reggie Roby-like, you know, ability right now. And, you know, I hope he can even get better. I don't know if he can get better, but if he does, we're talking someone that's going to be very, very, very deadly for next season, and he's a great weapon.
Overall, let's just grade this season. You know, A through F. A, obviously, I think we probably have to be just a little short of an A. I think an A is probably a Big Ten West championship, a showing. Yep. In a Big Ten championship game and a major bowl game. You know, in a normal season, I think an A season is probably – like I'll say last season, probably an A-, right? A 10-win season, a great win in a Holiday Bowl, a lot of cool things to hang your hat on, but fell just short of the ultimate goal of playing in the Big Ten championship game. You know, this is probably a step back from that, and I think you have to look at it in context, you know, not just in a vacuum, and the context being no non-conference, no spring football, any of that kind of stuff, really weird, you know, the season being canceled in August and then reformed in September, and Iowa dealt with some COVID issues in the interim there because they had sent everybody home after the season was canceled, the 0-2 start, all of that. I really want to give this like a B+, which I feel like, again, in a vacuum would feel high for a 6-2 team. But with the context of everything going on and the way the season started and how they bounced back, taking into account the fact that their strength of schedule wasn't the greatest, I think a B+ is probably where I put the 2020 football season.
You're right on. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, with given everything that they had to go through and being able to stay on track, they lost two games. That sucked. But they didn't stop. I mean, Wisconsin, they kind of stopped. You know, and they have a similar culture as Iowa does. But you didn't see that out of them. You look at this Iowa team, they just kept on going. They kept their head down and they continued to play hard, and they almost were rewarded for it at the end of the year with a bowl game. But it's just the amount of you know, overcoming this adversity of all the things happening, whether it be the racial thing during the off season, and then the COVID hitting, and then, you know, avoiding any COVID related you know, issues to keep players out. That's the thing that I was most amazed about. You know, they're getting testing every day. The University of Iowa, thank goodness for them, they had the ability to give them really accurate and timely tests, and we were able to keep all these kids playing. And for them to have the ability to, you know, stay together and to not be going out and not getting themselves in trouble, you know, it was amazing. So yeah, I think a B+ is absolutely the mark they should do. Then this is a team that, you know, their two losses, they only lost by, what was it, 4 points?
Yeah.
4 points. 4 points, you know, more than that, just to beat them. But you're looking at 4 points, and then, you know, that's all we lost by. We could have swung that a different way. We could be undefeated. Not having those non-conference games as a bench to prepare you for Big Ten play, I mean, for an Iowa team, a developmental team, that is a crucial time to get those kinks out. We had no time to do that. We were just thrown into the fire. Here you go. Big Ten season, go.
Joe,
you could argue the other teams had the same thing, but for Iowa, it's a little bit different. It takes us a little time to get rolling. So I'm impressed. A B+, absolutely.
We will have some time as spring football gets closer and as we get through this basketball season to start looking ahead to next year. And I want you and I to kind of do a pod like this, but previewing the season, you know, not really a preview, but kind of a look ahead to what 2021's football season could and should look like. And we'll do that here in the coming weeks as our attention now turns pretty fully to this Hawkeye basketball team and all of the things out there and the expectations. But as we put a bow on the 2020 season, Joe, anything we haven't touched on that you really want to talk about? Any storylines or aspects or anything that we didn't talk about in these last, you know, 45 minutes or so that you really want to put out there?
Well, you know, I'm glad that you know, Kirk is going to be our guy. Some of the other coaches in the Big Ten, I think the carousel is kind of moving, and we heard Jim Harbaugh is staying in the league. He's going to be Michigan's coach next year. However, I think that's probably his last year. You look at Northwestern with Pat Fitzgerald. He might be gone next year. He, you know, Chicago's looking pretty hard for a new coach, which they need a new coach. They need a whole new organization at that program, but that's another story. But yeah, I mean, the coaching carousel in the Big Ten, for the most part, has stayed intact. But there's some people that are going to be moved, you know, pretty shortly, I think, for next season if things don't change during the offseason.
No doubt. It's good to have the solid guy at the top that we have. It's, you know, in my lifetime, Iowa has had two head football coaches, and
incredible.
That's a remarkable thing, and two guys that I think we can all be proud of and be fans of, and we'll have statues and streets and things like that named of both of them for long, long time. Joe, this has been a lot of fun, man. It's cool to put a bow on this season, which was a very good season. And now, as I said, it's all roads to basketball, baby. And let's go win a Big Ten title and go get to a Final Four, huh?
Oh, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. You watch. It's going to happen.
I love it.
We're going to celebrate hard.
Joe and I will we'll be back with more podcasts throughout the spring, you know, all the time. We're always putting stuff up on Hawkeye Nation. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and check out the site. Rick Brown, John Bonacamp, Rob Howe, a bunch of people contributing and doing a lot of really cool things. And we're just trying to give you the best Hawkeye content out there. So we appreciate it. Joe, thank you, man. This is fun.
Hey, Andrew. Thank you. Go Hawks.
Thank you for listening. Go Hawks.